Bill Buford was a brash young American when he arrived at Cambridge University in England in 1977 to study English. He soon became bored with his classes and turned to reviving a floundering 90-year-old undergraduate magazine called Granta. Under his direction, Granta became one of the most influential and best-selling literary magazines in England. In 1985, Viking Penguin began publishing Granta in this country. Bill Buford describes Granta as a magazine with a mission.
What I'm trying to do with Granta is create a magazine that somebody likes to be in as a reader, something that repays the effort of reading. We're not trying to distinguish literary writing from any other kind of writing. It's just, if it's distinguished, it's distinguished for its seriousness, or it's distinguished for its ambition, or it's distinguished for what it's trying to get across, or it's distinguished for the complex ways in which it's engaging a reader. But it's not distinguished because it's literary.
So this means that you would consider things like travel writing, journalism, short stories, all under the umbrella of what you'd publish.
So that ostensibly one could look into the magazine and find a generic mishmash of interview, document, autobiography, memoir, fiction, politics, polemic, all within the same issue. And actually, I would like to think with an element of coherence running through all the pieces.
Give me an example of one or two pieces that made you think, this is really the kind of stuff I want to be putting out.
One of the most exciting things was publishing the British journalist and poet James Fenton, who sometime before Marcos even mentioned that he wanted to have an election, said that he would like to go to the Philippines because the place was exotic and strange. And we were very enthusiastic and sent him there. And he arrived, as it turns out, the week before the elections, was there during the elections, disappeared between the elections and what followed afterwards to spend some time with the guerrillas, watching war videos on a Betamax in the jungle with them, eating Dunkin' Donuts and returning for the Snap Revolution, and writing very, very quickly what in fact was a book that we brought out several weeks after the end of that revolution. But it wasn't a novel. It was a piece of reportage. But it also illustrated what I think is perhaps our biggest editorial contribution, and one that we've stumbled upon largely accidentally, but one of the most exciting, which is an area that I sometimes describe as narrative journalism.
You're interested in literature that has some kind of political content to it, political teeth to it. Say it has a political message that you don't endorse. Would that hold you back?
I don't know. There's some things we publish that I don't wholly endorse. I have been criticized for publishing really stuff that fundamentally I do endorse.
Liberal, radical,
or would
toward the left.
Just if I read it, I would sort of like it or agree with it.
Okay.
I mean, to put it in its most elemental. It's interesting to get into to having pieces that are taking apart communism in the East and that pieces that are taking apart, that are sort of taking apart the politics of Central America at the same time next to each other, and they're starting to open up issues and starting to open up issues about how you think about the left and how you think about resistance and how you think about whatever the dominant political culture is. But there is, on the whole, probably a coherent, something of a coherent political sensibility in the magazine.
Granta existed long before you became its editor. Give us a short history of the magazine.
Well, its first issue came out in 1889, and it was loosely associated with the university ever since then, taking on a number of different forms from generation to generation, being at some points a kind of boys' school magazine, at some point something like Punch, at something like Private Eye. It got very literary at one point, was publishing Ted Hughes and Sylvia Plath and A.A. Milne and E.M. Forster. Ran into financial difficulties at the end of the 60s, early 70s, when two students, Colin McCabe and Stephen Heath, produced an elegant issue devoted to structuralism called Signs of the Times, which the Treasurer could see they couldn't possibly pay for, and he pocketed all the money and went to Paris with his girlfriend, and the magazine ceased publishing. Resumed sometime after that in a moribund mimeograph format with staples in the spine when I arrived in Cambridge with the ludicrous idea of doing an issue devoted to American writing.
Okay, so you had no track record as an editor.
No.
Granta had become a magazine that was mimeographed and stapled together. How did you get writers to submit their writing to you for this new American Writing edition?
one limited thing we were offering to a number of American writers was a limited British audience. And
it's hard for American writers to reach British readers.
To cross the Atlantic. I wrote 22 authors, pretty long, detailed letters in each case, expecting two replies, and got 19 manuscripts, which presupposed...
What did you write to them?
About their work and why I liked their work and why we wanted to publish it and what we hope to do in publishing it and what we hope to do in the magazine. And we got so many manuscripts in return that we had to publish the magazine in more or less its current format, even though we were completely clueless about how to do it. And the first issue looks like it was, its design was inspired by a telephone directory. And its printing was the cheapest possible printing, with the result that when it was reprinted, it started to disintegrate. And any copy of that issue now is mainly all black inside.
You know, a lot of fairly famous writers are very famous writers. If they want to help out a new magazine, will send their lesser pieces of work, the pieces of work that the very famous, high-paying magazines won't be interested in. Did that ever happen to you, that a writer who you really liked and respected sent you something that you knew was of inferior quality for what they were capable of doing?
We've lost some friends, invariably, as one would. But you've just got to be as true as you can. I mean, in the early days, I think I would be... the early days, it was rather fun, because in the early days, the magazine was really just me and my friend Pete DiBala, who's now an English academic and, in fact, tenured. And I would go out and meet people and meet writers and be charmed by them and love them and adore them and drink pints of beer with them and come back with a manuscript in my pocket and barely able to read it on the train. But by the time I got back to Cambridge, I would say, got to publish it. And then Pete, sober, antisocial, short, squat, real misogynist, would look at it and go, it's awful. It's awful. What's the matter with you? It's appalling. And somehow Pete's rigid antisocial standards actually established probably the standard of the magazine more than anything else, which is that he refused to meet people and insisted on judging everything solely on the basis of what he saw on the page, which is remarkably effective and was probably the best editorial education that I ever had.
You're trying to publish pieces by fairly well-known writers and also to discover fairly new writers. Are you trying to be a literary scout in a way? Do you see that as being part of your role?
No, not at all.
Why not?
Because we're not, well, because we're not altruistic. It's not a charity. And it's not a scouting agency. What we're trying to do is come up with something that entertains us and hope that it entertains the people that buy the magazine. And that means something that's going to be fresh and new and doing something that someone else hasn't done. Invariably, that means that there will be quite a few well-known writers in the magazine. But actually, in fact, it means that there are quite a few unknown writers in every magazine. And they probably make up half to three-quarters of the contents of the magazine.
Are you a writer yourself?
I am writing. I am writing a book that was due a month ago that I'll have to be completed very shortly, which was based, I suppose, again, in the same narrative tradition, the same journalist tradition, based on Mike's time running around with English soccer hooligans. It's an American's first-person account entitled Among the Thugs. It's mainly my time with the thugs of Manchester United.
Can you edit your own writing?
Probably not, but one great virtue of being the editor of a magazine that publishes some very good writers is that you can exploit their good time as they've exploited yours, and I trust I'm being edited by about 50 literary geniuses before my book ever sees print, so I'm sure it's going to be saved by all my friends, and if it fails, it'll be entirely their fault.
Of course. Thanks very much for talking with us.
Yes.
Bill Buford is the editor of Granta Magazine. This is Fresh Air.